The clock ticked its arrhythmic tock. It finally stuttered its way to 1 o'clock, and Vimes got up and went into the oblong office.
"Ah, Vimes," said Lord Vetinari, looking up.
"Yes, sir." Vimes had managed a few hours' sleep and had even attempted to shave. The patrician shuffled some papers on his desk.
"It seems to have been a very busy night last night."
"Yes, sir." Vimes stood to attention. All uniformed men knew in their very soul how to act in circumstances like this. You stared straight ahead, for one thing.
"It appears that I have Dragon King of Arms in the cells," said the patrician.
"Yes, sir.
I've read your report. Somewhat tenuous evidence, I feel."
"Sir,
one of your witnesses isn't even alive, Vimes."
"No, sir. Neither is the suspect, sir. Technically.
He is, however, an important civic figure. An authority."
"Yes, sir." Lord Vetinari shuffled some of the papers on his desk. One of them was covered in sooty finger marks.
"It also appears I have to commend you, Commander."
"Sir?"
"The heralds at the Royal College of Arms, or at least at what remains of the Royal College of Arms, have sent me a note saying how bravely you worked last night.
Sir,
letting all those heraldic animals out of the pens and raising the alarm and so on. A tower of strength, they've called you. I gather most of the creatures are lodging with you at the present time?"
"Yes, sir. Couldn't stand by and let them suffer, sir. We've got some empty pens, sir, and Keith and Roderick are doing well in the lake. They've taken a liking to Sybil, sir."
Lord Vetinari coughed. Then he stared up at the ceiling for a while. "So you, assisted in the fire?"
"Yes, sir. Civic duty, sir."
"The fire was caused by a candlestick falling over, I understand. Possibly after your fight with Dragon King of Arms."
"So I believe, sir."
"And so, it seems, do the heralds."
"Anyone told Dragon King of Arms?" said Vimes innocently.
"Yes."
"Took it well, did he?"
"He screamed a lot, Vimes. In a heart-rending fashion, I am told, and I gather he uttered a number of threats against you, for some reason."
"I shall try to fit him into my busy schedule, sir."
"Bingly-bongly-beep,"
said a small, bright voice.
Vimes slapped a hand against his pocket.
Lord Vetinari fell silent for a moment. His fingers drummed softly on his desk. "Many fine old manuscripts in that place, I believe."
"Without price, I'm told."
"Yes, sir. Certainly worthless, sir." "Is it possible you misunderstood what I just said, Commander?"
"Could be, sir."
"The provenances of many splendid old families went up in smoke, Commander. Of course, the heralds will do what they can, and the families themselves keep records, but frankly, I understand it's all going to be patchwork and guesswork. Extremely embarrassing."
"Are you smiling, Commander?" "It was probably a trick of the light, sir."
"Commander, I always used to consider that you had a definite anti-authoritarian streak in you."
"Sir?"
"It seems that you have managed to retain this, even though you are authority."
"Sir?"
"That's practically zen."
"Sir?"
"It seems I've only got to be unwell for a few days, and you managed to upset everyone of any importance in this city."
"Sir?"
"Was that a yes, sir, or a no, sir, Sir Samuel?"
"It was just a sir, sir."
Lord Vetinari glanced at a piece of paper. "Did you really punch the president of the Assassin's Guild?"
"Yes, sir."
"Why?"
"Didn't have a dagger, sir."
Vetinari turned away abruptly. "The Council of Churches, Temples, Sacred Groves, and Big Ominous Rocks is demanding, a number of things, several of them involving wild horses. Initially, however, they want me to sack you."
"Yes, sir."
"In all, I've had 17 demands for your badge. Some want parts of your body attached. Why did you have to upset everybody?"
"I suppose it's a knack, sir."
"But what could you hope to achieve?"
"Well, sir, since you ask, we found out who murdered Father Tuvalchek and Mr. Hopkinson, and who was poisoning you, sir."
Vimes paused.
"Two out of three's not bad, sir."
Vetinari riffled through the papers again. workshop owners, assassins, priests, butchers. You seem to have infuriated most of the leading figures in the city, he sighed. Really, it seems I have no choice. As of this week, I'm giving you a pay rise.
Vimes blinked. Sir?
Nothing unseemly. $10 a month. And I expect they need a new dartboard in the watchhouse. They usually do, I recall.
It's detritus, said Vimes, his mind unable to think of anything other than an honest reply. He tends to split them.
Ah, yes. And talking of splits, Vimes, I wonder if your forensic genius could help me with a little conundrum we found this morning.
The patrician stood up and headed for the stairs.
Yes, sir, what is it? Said Vimes, following him down. It's in the rat's chamber, Vimes.
Really, sir? Vetinari pushed open the double doors.
Voila, he said.
That's some kind of musical instrument, isn't it, sir?
No, Commander, the word means, what is that in the table? Said the patrician sharply.
Vimes looked into the room. There was no one there. The long mahogany table was bare. Except for the axe. It had embedded itself in the wood very deeply, almost splitting the table along its entire length. Someone had walked up to the table and brought an axe down right in the centre as hard as they could, and then left it there, its handle pointing towards the ceiling.
That's an axe, said Vimes. Astonishing, said Lord Vetinari, and you barely had time to study it. Why is it there?
I really couldn't say, sir.
According to the servants, Sir Samuel, you came into the palace at 6 o'clock this morning.
Oh, yes, sir, to check that the bastard was safely in a cell, sir, and to see that everything was all right, of course.
You didn't come into this room?
Vimes kept his gaze fixed somewhere on the horizon.
Why should I have done that, sir?
The patrician tapped the axe handle. It vibrated with a faint thumping noise.
I believe some of the city council met in here this morning, or came in here at least. I'm told they hurried out very quickly, looking rather disturbed, I'm told.
Maybe it was one of them that did it, sir.
That is, of course, a possibility, said Lord Vetinari. I suppose you wouldn't be able to find one of your famous clues on the thing?
Shouldn't think so, sir. Not with all these fingerprints on it.
It would be a terrible thing, would it not, if people thought that they could take the law into their own hands?
Oh, no fear of that, sir. I'm holding on tightly to it.
Lord Vetinari plunked the axe again. Tell me, Sir Samuel, do you know the phrase quis custodiet ipsos custodes?
It was an expression Carrot had occasionally used, but Vimes was not in the mood to admit anything.
Can't say that I do, sir, he said. Something about trifle, is it? It means who guards the guards themselves, Sir Samuel.
Ah.
Well, sir, who watches the watch, I wonder?
Oh, that's easy, sir. We watch one another.
Really? An intriguing point.
Lord Vetinari walked out of the room and back into the main hall, with Vimes trailing behind.
However, he said, in order to keep the peace, the golem will have to be destroyed.
No, sir.
Allow me to repeat my instruction.
No, sir.
I'm sure I just gave you an order, Commander. I distinctly felt my lips move.
No, sir. He's alive, sir.
He's just made of clay, Vimes.
Aren't we all, sir? According to them pamphlets Constable Visit keeps handing out. Anyway, he thinks he's alive, and that's good enough for me. The patrician waved a hand towards the stairs, and his office full of paper.
Nevertheless, Commander, I've had no less than 9 missives from leading religious figures declaring that he is an abomination.
Yes, sir. I've given that viewpoint a lot of thought, sir, and reached the following conclusion. Arseholes to the lot of them, sir.
The patrician's hand covered his mouth for a moment. Sir Samuel, you are a harsh negotiator. Surely you can give and take?
Couldn't say, sir. Vimes walked to the main doors and pushed them open. Fog's lifted, sir, he said. There's a bit of cloud, but you can see all the way across the brass bridge.
What will you use the golem for?
Not use, sir. Employ. I thought he might be useful to keep the peace, sir.
A watchman.
Yes, sir, said Vimes. Haven't you heard, sir? Golems do all the mucky jobs. Vetinari watched him go and sighed.
He does so like a dramatic exit, he said. Yes, my lord, said Drumknot, who had appeared noiselessly at his shoulder.
Ah, Drumknot.
The patrician took a length of candle out of his pocket and handed it to his secretary. Dispose of this somewhere safely, will you?
Yes, my lord.
It's the candle from the other night.
It's not burnt down, my lord, but I saw the candle end in the holder.
Oh, of course. I cut off enough to make a stub and let the wick burn for a moment. I couldn't let our gallant policeman know I'd worked it out for myself, could I? Not when he was making such an effort and having so much fun being, well, being Vimes. I'm not completely heartless, you know.
But, my lord, you could have sorted it out diplomatically. Instead, he went around upsetting things and making a lot of people very angry and afraid.
Yes. Dear me.
Ah, said Drumknot.
Quite so, said the patrician.
Do you wish me to have the table in the rat's chamber repaired?
No, Drumknot. Leave the axe where it is. It will make a good conversation piece, I think.
May I make an observation, my lord?
Of course you may, said Vetinari, watching Vimes walk through the palace gates.
The thought occurs, sir, that if Commander Vimes did not exist, you would have had to invent him.
You know, Drumknot, I rather think I did.
Atheism is also a religious position,
Dorful rumbled.
No, it's not, said Constable Visit. Atheism is a denial of a god.
Therefore it is a religious position, said Dorful. Indeed, a true atheist thinks of the gods constantly, albeit in terms of denial. Therefore atheism is a form of belief. If the atheist truly did not believe, he or she would not bother to deny.
Did you read those pamphlets I gave you? Said Visit suspiciously.
Yes, many of them did not make sense, but I should like to read some more.
Really? Said Visit, his eyes gleamed. You really want more pamphlets?
Yes, there is much in them that I would like to discuss. If you know some priests, I would enjoy disputation.
All right, said Sergeant Colon. So are you going to take the sodding oath or not, Dorful?
Dorful held up a hand the size of a shovel.
I, Dorful, pending the discovery of a deity whose existence withstands rational debate, swear by the temporary precepts of a self-derived moral system.
You really want more pamphlets, said Constable Visit.
Sergeant Colon rolled his eyes.
Yes, said Dorful.
Oh, my God, said Constable Visit and burst into tears. No one's ever asked for more pamphlets before.
Colon turned when he realized Vimes was watching.
It's no good, sir, he said. I've been trying to swear him in for half an hour, sir, and we keep ending up arguing about oaths and things.
You willing to be a watchman, Dorful? Said Vimes.
Yes.
Right, that's as good as a swear to be. Give him his badge, Fred, and this is for you, Dorful. It's a chit to say you're officially alive, just in case you run into any trouble. You know, with people.
Thank you, said Dorful solemnly. If ever I feel I am not alive, I will take this out and read it.
What are your duties? Said Vimes.
To serve the public trust, "'Protect the innocent and seriously prod buttock, sir,' said Dorful.
"'He learns fast, doesn't he?' said Colon. "'I didn't even tell him the last one.' "'People won't like it,' said Nobby. "'It's not going to be popular. A golem as a watchman.'
"'What better work for one who loves freedom than the job of watchman?' Law is the servant of freedom. Freedom without limits is just a word, said Dorful ponderously.
You know, said Colon, if it doesn't work out, you could always get a job making fortune cookies. Funny thing, that, said Nobby. You never get bad fortunes in cookies. Ever notice that? They never say stuff like, oh dear, things are going to be really bad. I mean, they never miss fortune cookies.
Vimes lit a cigar and shook the match to put it out. That, Corporal, is because of one of the fundamental driving forces of the universe.
What, like people who read fortune cookies are the lucky ones? Said Nobby.
No, because people who sell fortune cookies want to go on selling them. Come on, Constable Dorful, we're going for a walk.
There's a lot of paperwork, sir, said Sergeant Colon.
Tell Captain Carrot I said he should look at it, said Vimes from the doorway.
He hasn't been in yet, sir.
It'll keep.
Right, sir.
Colon went and sat behind his desk. It was a good place to be, he'd decided. There was absolutely no chance of finding any nature there. He'd had a rare conversation with Mrs. Colon this morning, and made it clear that he was no longer interested in getting close to the soil, because he'd been as close to the soil as it was possible to get, and the soil, it turned out, was just dirt. A good thick layer of cobblestones was, he decided, about as close as he wanted to get to nature. Also, nature tended to be squishy.
"'I've got to go on duty,' said Nobby. "'Captain Carrot wants me to do crime prevention in Peach Pie Street.'
"'How'd you do that, then?' said Colon.
"'Keep away,' he said. "'You, Nobby, what's this about you not being a lord after all?' said Colon cautiously. "'I think I got the sack,' said Nobby. "'Bit of a relief, really. That Nobby grub isn't much, and the drink is frankly piss.'
"'Lucky escape for you, then,' said Colon.
"'I mean, you won't have to go giving your clothes away to gardeners and so on.'
"'Yeah, wish I'd never told him about the damn ring, really.'
"'Would have saved you a lot of trouble, certainly,' said Colon.
Nobby spat on his badge and buffed it industriously with his sleeve.
"'It's a good job I never told him about the tiara, the coronet, and the three gold lockets,' he said to himself.
"'Where are we going?' said Dorful, as Vimes strolled across the brass bridge.
"'I thought I might break you in gently with some guard duty at the palace,' said Vimes.
"'Ah, this is where my new friend Constable Visit is also on guard,' said Dorful.
"'Splendid!
I wish to ask you a question,' said the golem.
"'Yes?
I smashed the treadmill, but the golems repaired it.' "'Why? And I let the animals go, but they just milled around stupidly. Some of them even went back to the slaughter pens. Why?'
"'Welcome to the world, Constable Dorful.
"'Is it frightening to be free?'
"'You said it.
"'And say to people, throw off your chains and they make new chains for themselves?'
"'Seems to be a major human activity, yes.'
Dorful rumbled as he thought about this.
"'Yes,' he said eventually. "'I can see why. Freedom is like having the top of your head opened up.'
"'I'll have to take your word for that, Constable.'
"'And you will pay me twice as much as other watchmen,' said Dorful.
"'Will I?'
"'Yes. I do not sleep. I can work constantly. I am a bargain. I do not need days off to bury my granny.
How soon they learn, thought Vimes. He said, but you have holy days off, don't you?
Either all days are holy or none are. I have not decided yet.
What do you need money for, Dorful?
I shall save up and purchase the golem Klutz, who labours in the pickle factory, and give him to himself. Then together we will earn and save for the golem Bobkis of the coal merchant. The three of us will labour and buy the golem Schmarta, who toils at the $7 tailor's in Peach Pie Street.
Then the four of us will...
Some people might decide to free their comrades by force and bloody revolution, said Vimes. Not that I'm suggesting that in any way, of course.
No, that would be theft. We are bought and sold, so we will buy ourselves free by our labour. No one else to do it for us. We will do it by ourselves.
Vimes smiled to himself. Probably no other species in the world would demand a receipt with their freedom. Some things you just couldn't change.
Ah, he said, it seems some people want to talk to us.
A crowd was approaching over the bridge in a mass of grey, black and saffron robes. It was made up of priests. They looked angry. As they pushed and shoved their way through the other citizens, several halos became interlocked. At their head was Hunon Ridcully, chief priest of Blind Eo, and the closest thing Ankh Morpork had to a spokesman on religious issues. He spotted Vimes and hurried towards him, admonitory finger upraised.
"Now see here, Vimes," he began, and stopped.
He glared at Dorful.
"Is this it?" he said.
"If you mean the golem, this is him," said Vimes. "Constable Dorful, your reverence." Dorful touched his helmet, respectively.
"How may we be of service?" he said.
"You've done it this time, Vimes," said Ridcully, ignoring him. "You've gone altogether too far by half. You made this thing speak, and it isn't even alive."
"We want it smashed."
"Blasphemy! People won't stand for it."
Ridcully looked around at the other priests.
"I'm talking," he said.
He turned back to Vimes.
"This comes under the heading of gross profanity and the worship of idols."
"I don't worship him. I'm just employing him," said Vimes, beginning to enjoy himself.
"And he's far from idle."
He took a deep breath.
"And if it's gross profanity you're looking for..."
"Excuse me," said Dorful.
"We're not listening to you. You're not even really alive," said a priest.
Dorful nodded.
"This is fundamentally true," he said.
"See? He admits it.
I suggest you take me and smash me and grind the bits into fragments and pound the fragments into powder and mill them again to the finest dust there can be, and I believe you will not find a single atom of life."
"True. Let's do it.
However, in order to test this fully, one of you must volunteer to undergo the same process."
There was a silence.
"That's not fair," said a priest, after a while. "All anyone has to do is bake up your dust again and you'd be alive."
There was more silence. Ridcully said,
"Is it only me, or are we on tricky theological ground here?"
There was more silence. Another priest said, "Is it true you've said you'll believe in any god whose existence can be proved by logical debate?"
"Yes."
Vimes had a feeling about the immediate future and took a few steps away from Dorful.
"But the gods plainly do exist," said a priest.
"It is not evident."
A bolt of lightning lanced through the clouds and hit Dorful's helmet. There was a sheet of flame and then a trickling noise. Dorful's molten armour formed puddles around his white-hot feet.
"I don't call that much of an argument," said Dorful calmly from somewhere in the clouds of smoke.
"It's tended to carry the audience," said Vimes, "up till now."
The chief priest of Blind Eo turned to the other priests.
"All right, you fellows, there's no need for any of that."
"But Ofla is a vengeful god," said a priest at the back of the crowd.
"Trigger happy is what he is," said Ridcully.
Another lightning bolt zigzagged down, but bent at right angles a few feet above the chief priest's hat, and earthed itself on a wooden hippo, which split. The chief priest smiled smugly and turned back to Dorful, who was making little clinking noises as he cooled.
"What you're saying is, you'll accept the existence of any god only if it can be proved by discussion."
"Yes," said Dorful.
Ridcully rubbed his hands together.
"Not a problem, me old China," he said. "Firstly, let us take the..."
"Excuse me," said Dorful.
He bent down and picked up his badge. The lightning had given it an interesting melted shape.
"What are you doing?" said Ridcully.
"Somewhere a crime is happening," said Dorful. "But when I am off duty, I will gladly dispute with the priest of the most worthy god."
He turned and strode on across the bridge. Vimes nodded hurriedly at the shocked priests and ran after him.
We took him and baked him in the fire, and he's turned out to be free, he thought. No words in the head except the ones he's chosen to put there himself. And he's not just an atheist, he's a ceramic atheist. Fireproof. It looked like being a good day. Behind them, on the bridge, a fight was breaking out. Angua was packing, or rather she was failing to pack. The bundle couldn't be too heavy to carry by mouth. But a little money, she wouldn't have to buy much food, and a change of clothes, for those occasions when she might have to wear clothes, didn't have to take up much room. "The boots are a problem," she said aloud.
"Maybe if you knot the laces together, you could carry them round your neck," said Cherie, who was sitting on the narrow bed.
"Good idea. Do you want these dresses? I've never got round to wearing them. I expect you could cut them down." Cherie took them in both arms.
"This one's silk.
There's probably enough material for you to make two for one.
Do you mind if I share them out? Only some of the lads, the ladies at the watch house,"
Cherie savoured the word ladies,
"are beginning to get a bit thoughtful."
"Going to melt down their helmets, are they?" said Angua.
"Oh, no, but perhaps they could be made into a more attractive design.
Yes? Cherie shifted uneasily.
"You've never actually eaten anyone, have you? You know, crunching bones and so on?"
"No."
"I mean, I only heard my second cousin was eaten by werewolves. He was called Sven."
"Can't say I recall the name," said Angua. Cherie tried to grin.
"That's all right, then," she said.
"So you won't need that silver spoon in your pocket," said Angua. Cherie's mouth dropped open, and then the words tumbled over themselves.
I don't know how it got there. Must have dropped in when I was, washing up. I didn't mean—"
"It doesn't worry me, honestly. I'm used to it."
"But I didn't think you'd—"
"Look, don't get the wrong idea. It's not a case of not wanting to," said Angua. "It's a case of wanting to and not doing it."
"You don't really have to go, do you?"
"Oh, I don't know if I can take the watch seriously, and sometimes I think Carrot's working up to ask me—" "Well, it'd never work out. It's the way he just assumes everything, you know. So it's best to go now," Angua lied.
"Won't Carrot try and stop you?"
"Yes, but there's nothing he can say."
"He'll be upset."
"Yes," said Angua briskly, throwing another dress on the bed, "and then he'll get over it."
"Hrolf Thighbite has asked me out," said Cherie shyly, looking at the floor, "and I'm almost certain he's male."
"Glad to hear it."
Cherie stood up. "I'll walk with you as far as the watch house. I've got to go on duty."
They were halfway along Elm Street before they saw Carrot, head and shoulders above the crowd.
"Looks like he was coming to see you," said Cherie. "Shall I go away?"
"Too late."
"Ah, good morning, Corporal Miss Littlebottom," said Carrot cheerfully. "Hello, Angua. I was just coming to see you, but I had to write my letter home first, of course."
He took off his helmet and smoothed back his hair. He began.
"I know what you're going to ask," said Angua.
"You do?"
"I know you've been thinking about it. You knew I was wondering about going." "It was obvious, was it? And the answer's no. I wish it could be yes."
Carrot looked astonished.
"It never occurred to me that you'd say no," he said. "I mean, why should you?" "Good grief, you amaze me," she said. "You really do."
"I thought it would be something you'd want to do," said Carrot. He sighed. "Oh, well, doesn't matter, really." Angua felt that a leg had been kicked away.
"It doesn't matter," she said. "I mean, yes, it'd have been nice, but I won't lose any sleep over it."
"You won't?"
"Well, no, obviously not. You've got other things you want to do. That's fine. I just thought you might enjoy it. I'll do it by myself."
"What? How can—" Angua stopped. "What are you talking about, Carrot?"
"The Dwarf Bread Museum. I promised Mr. Hopkinson's sister that I'd tidy it up. You know, get it sorted out. She's not very well off, and I thought it could raise some money. Just between you and me, there's several exhibits in there that could be better presented. But I'm afraid Mr. Hopkinson was rather set in his ways. I'm sure there's a lot of dwarfs in the city that'd flock there if they knew about it. And, of course, there's a lot of youngsters that ought to learn more about their proud heritage. A good dusting and a lick of paint would make all the difference, I'm sure, especially on the older loaves. I don't mind giving up a few days off. I just thought it might cheer you up. But I appreciate that bread isn't everyone's cup of tea."
Angua stared at him. It was the stare that Carrot so often attracted. It roamed every feature of his face, looking for the tiniest clue that he was making some kind of a joke.
some long, deep joke at the expense of everyone else. Every sinew in her body knew that he must be, but there was not a clue, not a twitch to prove it.
"Yes," she said weakly, still searching his face. "I expect it could be a little gold mine."
"Museums have got to be a whole lot more interesting these days, and you know there's a whole gorilla crumpet assortment he hasn't even catalogued," said Carrot, "and some early examples of defensive bagels."
"Gosh," said Angua, "hey, why don't we paint a big sign saying something like, 'The Dwarf Bread Experience'?"
That probably wouldn't work for dwarfs," said Carrot, oblivious to sarcasm. "A dwarf bread experience tends to be short. But I can see it certainly caught your imagination."
"I'll have to go," Angua thought as they strolled on down the street. "Sooner or later, he'll see that it can't really work out. Werewolves and humans. We've both got too much to lose. Sooner or later, I'll have to leave him.
But, for one day at a time, let it be tomorrow."
"Want the dresses back?" said Cherie, behind her.
"Maybe one or two," said Angua.
That is the end of Feet of Clay. It was written by Terry Pratchett and read by Nigel Planer.